My name's Ladybug, and I've been doing mostly work in town, gathering supplies for people in the woods and getting people together to get out into the woods and when they need picked up, get out of the woods, as well as going in whenever I can to be backwoods with people. And the Mtol represents to me is, like I said, an amazingly endangered ecosystem in total. It's a place of wildness. It's a place that touches my heart and my soul every time I go there to see deer coming in and checking us out and to have rabbits run across the road in front of you and having life just living and going around you. It really just shows me the necessity once again for wildlands, and it just destroys my heart to think of this area being destroyed, not only the trees, but the whole cycle of life and the web of life that we too need to survive. And it's just an amazingly inspiring place to really feel yourself and feel the wildness of the lands and how it should be. And I think that everyone should have a chance to feel that and know what that's like.
I'm known as Private Puke out on Rainbow Ridge. And as far as describing the area itself, physically speaking, it's incredibly steep, to a point where it almost defies understanding at times to look at the sides of these hills and see how steeply they go from ridgetop down to the streams at the bottom of them. These trees, it's amazing that they have grown to the size that they have, considering the harshness of the environment that they live in. It's clear that it's a very fragile ecosystem, especially after hiking the area nearby, also in the Rainbow Ridge Complex, which was cut in 1985, which has not done a good job of coming back at all. It looks nothing like the native trees and vegetation that exist on the rest of it. The Douglas firs that were replanted there are not coming back as well as they could be, probably partly due to lax enforcement of good planting by the company, but also due to the fact that the elevation and the steepness and all these things make it a very sensitive ecosystem by any standards.
My name is Josh Brown, and I've done a little bit of everything in the Mtol campaign. I've been out in the woods. I've helped organize some of the actions. I've basically helped bottom line support in town. One of the many folks who've done that. I've driven. I've done some media. Been a talking head. It's a nonviolent campaign. We do nonviolent trainings. People out there have a strong ethic of nonviolence. I think that's been well proven in the interactions they've had with the Columbia and Pacific Lumber Fallers and the Humboldt County Sheriffs who've gone out there to log for 3 days. And with this road blockade that's a mile up from the cutting units, nonviolence and people locked down, and it's all earth first, but it's forest defense. You know, these are tactics that are used all over the Pacific Northwest to defend forest. And
so it's kind of like a collaboration.
Yeah, it is a collaboration between people in the Mtol community, Earth Firsters. There's some people who've never done an Earth First action but are involved very heavily with the Mtol Forest Defense Campaign.
My name is Human, and I've been basically doing a lot of direct support, you know, making sure that the tarps are set up and that there's water and that you know, firewood and things, and I've been out there pretty much solid since it started in November. It's a nice hike. It's like 13 miles. It's pretty much uphill half the way, and then kind of an even downhill the rest of the way. It's nice. It takes 6 hours, but four hours out.
Well, with the infamous Headwaters deal that went down, it created a bunch of orphan areas, as we call them, the orphans of the Headwaters deal. One was the Hole in Headwaters. Actually, there are many, I should say. The two that we've really focused a lot of attention on is one of the Hole in Headwaters, which is the area in the South Fork of the Elk River directly adjacent to the Headwaters Preserve. And the other area is the Mtol. And this is 3,000 acres of old-growth Doug fir and 14,000 acres of holdings that are primarily in the North Fork of the Mtol River that are threatened with logging, basically for saving the Headwaters Grove and a number of other groves and signing some minimal protections regarding endangered species such as salmon and murrelets and spotted owls. Pacific Lumber, for the most part, has carte blanche to go and log in the Mentole extensively, and they have 7 plans now filed, 3 of which they can log on at this point. And they basically want to fragment the hell out of that watershed and out of the old growth there. And the more they fragment it, the less value it has as habitat, the less old growth dependent species come to rely on it. And it's basically a blueprint for the genocide of the Mentole.
Yeah, my name's Doc, and I've been involved in the Mentole for the last 4 months, and I've been mostly out in the woods during that time. The first day that they came in, a bunch of us were hiding out in the bushes, and they came to their designated parking spot and pulled in, and we went up and greeted them and engaged them in dialogue, explaining to them what we were doing there. And it was a crew of Columbia fallers. There's about 7 trucks. They're like private trucks, just regular old trucks, and they had a bunch of ATVs with them, and they were getting ready to go into 425 and cut when we showed up and started just explaining our position on the whole thing and letting them know that they were going to have to leave because we weren't going to let them get anything done that day. They got one tree that day. There was 3 of us down in the units. We had the Humboldt County sheriffs chasing us around with these giant pepper spray cans, shooting these big streams of pepper spray at us left and right. And also during that time, the fallers were able to get a chainsaw into one of the trees. And at that time, we charged up to where they were and were able to shut them down. However, by that time, the tree was far beyond survival. So that was the tree they ended up getting that day.
My name is Soma, and I was pepper sprayed 5 times. Each time it was a surprise attack. The officer would walk up to me nonchalantly and then pull out the pepper spray all of a sudden within 2 feet of my face and spray it at me. And I had just enough time to turn away, and it ended up turning that I would turn so it was on the right side of my face. I wasn't locked down. I wasn't endangering anybody's life. I wasn't hurting anybody. I wasn't doing nothing like that. I was standing there talking to the loggers about what they're doing and about this area and how they're Columbia fallers anyway. It's like, you know, there's other plans that Columbia can go to. You don't need to follow this one yet. Leave it alone for now. And the sheriff walked up and then told the loggers to stop talking to us and then that they would take care of it. You know, it was really scary because we were fearing for our lives there. These hillsides were really steep. They were totally reckless in their behavior without warning of any kind of thing before they would try any kind of violent tactic on us.
And this was who?
This was the sheriff's department. That was 2 weeks before I got arrested, 2.5 weeks before. My face burnt for 3 days afterwards. There was one public statement, I guess, in the, I don't know if it's public or not, but it was in the court write-up in the police report that the officer that was doing the spraying wrote up himself. And then he hit me in the back of the head with a canister after maybe the 4th time he sprayed me. In the write-up, he just said, he goes along, he says the date, and then he says the time and the place, Long Ridge area, and he says that he walked up, and because the protester or whatever was uncompliant or whatever it was, I'm not sure he used some kind of language like that, that he was forced to use a pain compliance pepper spray in order to subdue the protester or whatever. He used some kind of language like that. He said himself, which I had actually forgotten, that he had hit me in the back of the head with a canister, and he said that in the report himself. And I had totally forgotten about it until I read the report, and I'm glad that he reminded me of that, because that hurt once I remembered it. You know, there's so much going on at that time. It was pretty intense. Yeah. I mean, when your face is burning, it's, you know, who knows what that was. It could have been a stick or a rock they threw at it. And that was another thing. They were throwing rocks downhill. And eventually they chased me down this ravine. And then I told them, I said, you better not come down here. This is a really steep slope. You can slide and I won't be able to catch you. I won't be able to stop you from sliding down this ravine. And I pointed towards the rest of the ravine. And he could see himself how it went over an edge and you wouldn't be able to tell where you were going after that. And he said, well, all right, well, I'm slipping down there after you. And he started kicking beautiful moss over this rocks, and he started kicking it at down me, and one of them hit my foot, and boulders the size of my head and bigger were flying past me because of what he was kicking down at me. And then he pulled out his pepper spray and said, maybe I can reach it from here, and it was about 16 feet away, and it barely missed my feet.
They didn't come back for 3 weeks after that, and we were just out there just waiting for them, and they never came. And then when they finally did come back, they came 2 days in a row with twice as many cops as the first time, and the third day they brought like three times as many and a bunch, a lot of more fallers as well. That was their tactic. Then after day three of having, I mean, bringing out a huge array of cops and putting a very solid effort at getting us, they were able to get five of us that day. But I mean, it was just such a ridiculously dangerous day, and just things got so hairy back there that I think that it might have been a deterrent for them to come back immediately.
Hi, my name is Thunder, and I haven't been actually in the woods that much. As soon after I got into the woods, I was arrested. So to get into the Matol, it takes a night of hiking to get in. So we had hiked in that night, and we're just getting to know everybody in the dark, getting ready for morning wake up and watch. Morning came quickly. We all awoke and went to check out who came into the woods and which areas they were planning on cutting, because we quick heard the call that we needed to defend some areas.
Running around an active THP is unsafe if you're an activist or a cop. You know, like, anybody could have gotten, anybody that was present that day could have been seriously injured or killed. And that's why I think, I mean, maybe that's why the sheriffs haven't come back yet.
So two of us decided to go over to this unit and see what we could do to help. So maybe they need some more people. We were going to hopefully help out. We went over there, and as we're running up the hill, I looked over, and there's this logger, and I look up, there's this cop, and I look over, there's some people that I know, and there was like a big standoff. I didn't understand what was going on, and I was running as I was looking. Then all of a sudden, everyone was in motion, and I was being chased. And it was totally unexpected, so I started running for all I was worth, and this man was really close to me, this logger, and he grabbed me, and I was like, what the hell, man? And down I went into the ground, and then he was no longer longer, he was a cop. So it was a surprise, and I was arrested. I was, first of all, plastic cuffed. I was bawling because I was so worried about people getting killed that day. They were falling trees right next to us. I'd been in trees where they were threatening to fall next to us, so I believed them. I didn't think they weren't going to kill anybody that day, and I was very upset that I could no longer run around and help my friends. I was dragged away from there, carried, because I was bawling so hard I wasn't moving. So they just picked me up, took me to a meadow, put me on a line of cuffs on a chain with a couple other people in a meadow behind ATVs with one guard to watch us for hours until they said they were done logging for that day or done chasing people, which was actually the case. So we waited in the meadow, and then they decided to march us up the ATV trail to where they had a small encampment of police officers, many, many vehicles, many, many cops, a lot of chuckling, some good times. They had gotten 36 trees. It was not the best day for us. Then we were taken away, driven a couple hours to the Eureka County Jail.
With the blockades, there's less of a risk of life, we feel, and we can also keep them out of the whole area. We have other plans coming up, like 031 and 020, that could be coming for those any day. So we need to be able to keep them out of the entire area, that way we don't have to engage them in the woods. We can engage them up on the road, and hopefully we can keep things from getting to the point they got to originally when they first came out to try and get us.
Well, my name's Yubia. I've been involved in the Pacific Lumber Timber Harvest Plans in the Matol for the past 2 years. 2 years ago, we dealt with some plans along the Sulphur Creek drainage, and there was direct action out on Rainbow Ridge then, and I was involved in that. A lot of cat and mouse, nothing like what we have now, which is a full-scale free state, with all sorts of blockading devices and different tactics being employed in a huge group. After the third day of cat and mouse, where things got pretty hairy, there was not too much communication going on, too much direct communication going on between us here in town and the folks in the woods, but we both seemed to realize that it was time to modify our tactic, and we both, on separate ends, made plans for a road occupation and blockade, and they turned out to be constructed simultaneously. There's a dragon at the gate. There's a suspension device behind the gate. This is the disco ball. The disco ball is great. Then there's the wall, and then there's the spatula. So we have four blockading devices that extend from the bottleneck gate back down the ridge towards the units.
Well, I think strategically, we realized in the 3 days of logging that we can't have people in the woods where they're cutting. That is the last resort. And doing a blockade seemed like the more effective thing to stop them before they could actually get their trucks and their crews into the actual forest to log. There's an excellent area about a mile and a half up from 475, right at the intersection of Long Ridge and Rainbow Ridge. And there it's a very steep hillside with a road that's cut into the hill. So it's a natural bottleneck point. And there's a gate there. And what we did a month and a half ago, is drove at night in with a couple pickup trucks full of people and gear and an old car that we call the Blue Dragon. We drove it in, the car was working. We put it crossways in the road, blocking the road. Before we did that, we actually dug some holes. We put some pipes and cement down and some rebar and made lock boxes in the ground, things we call dragons. We put the car over it, which has holes in the bottom that people can stick their arms through and lock down into the road through the car. There's also some walls up of holes that were dug and things such as wood and metal and other scraps of stuff, debris we found out there, have been put upright and reburied in the road. And then again, there's a couple hanging platforms that are over some of the, you have to remember it's really steep out there over some of the steeper areas of the hills where ropes and lines are strung across the road. So if they cut those lines or interfere with them that are across the road as they're trying to drive in, they will endanger the people who are in these platforms, or what we call pods.
I'm Puke, and I've been out in the Matole off and on since September. And most of the time that I've been out there, it's simply been a matter of keeping everything going and everyone as happy and comfortable as possible. That's been the largest challenge facing us. Since we moved to the road, that's been especially difficult because the road is on top of a ridge and is very exposed to wind and weather, and it's definitely challenging to remain comfortable in those circumstances. I've also spent some time sitting in the one device that we call the spatula or the boom. It's kind of a new idea, new approach towards blockading a road whereby hopefully no one is arrested, but the blockade is maintained for as long as a lockdown. Although we're not sure about the the effectiveness of it yet.
My vision would be that this area is preserved in a most sustainable and intact way possible. It's not just a stand of old trees that needs to be protected. It's a completely endangered ecosystem full of wildlife and wild trees and wild plants, and it needs to be preserved in its entirety, and that's what I would like to see happen. And that's it. I would like to see more people, and I'd like to see a lot of support for this because it is an incredible place. And anybody who feels it in their heart to help in any way, we would be honored and blessed to have help. So our vision is to, you know, do the best we can in the circumstances.
Okay, hi, my name's Board Free, and right now I'm currently maintaining a road blockade on high up on Long Ridge and Rainbow Ridge. And we are here protecting a beautiful forest, defending the land, trying to keep the forest intact, and trying to spread love. We are not pushing people. We are not against even using wood products. We burn wood for fire to keep warm. But we are against clear-cutting steep hillsides and mistreating our Mama Earth. And we will stand up when she is being mistreated. What we can really do is more people, more warm bodies, more warm clothing, our donations are appreciated. So please come out here and visit us, even if it's just for a short while. We'd love to have your visit, and you can call the number that we will give you if you want to help out.
So some of the things that we can use assistance on, some of our needs, one of the main ones being we could really use some 5-watt radios. Those are our big ones, walkie-talkies, 5 watts. As far as food. We can always use donations of food, of produce, peanut butter and tofu, organic oats, rice or quinoa, grains like that, dried soup mixes, high protein pocket foods, vitamin C, echinacea, zinc, hydrogen peroxide, chocolate, always a treat for people in the forest, and ground coffee and tea. We can always use rain gear, waterproof tarps, Nokia 5100, 6100 cell phone batteries, pagers, UHF, VHF radios, video cameras, wool socks, dried fruits and nuts, things like that are most appreciated. Anything that you can do to help. You can also reach us at our hotline, which is 707-441-3828, and that will let you know where you could send stuff to us. So thank you.